You're listening to Seismic Radio, and we have got our next talk here from the VIA conference. VIA stands for Vision in Action. The conference took place from the 31st of October to the 2nd of November, and the talk you'll hear shortly took place on the 1st of November in the afternoon. The session was called On the Sofa, and the speakers were quite a few. The biggest bugbear I had with the On the Sofa session, I turned up for the studio, and we did a live broadcast from the conference. I went into my little cubicle and I was trying to look for the sofa, and I could not find it. It wasn't there. All the speakers were sitting down on some very uncomfortable chairs, and no sofa to be seen anywhere. That was actually quite a downer. I don't know. I guess they didn't have a trick to bring the sofa in, or it was too much hassle for just one session. I think even one of the speakers commented on it, and they were quite disappointed. There were quite a number of people sitting, I'm not quite sure, I think it was just in front of the podium, in front of the stage, and those guys were mainly speakers at the conference. The names, there were John Noble was there, there's Tony Pullen, who is giving a talk about his book he's recently written about discipleship. There was Simon Trundle there, and I think Phil Collins was there as well, talking about one or two things, but I'm not quite sure. The problem was I was sitting right in the back of the auditorium. I had a little cubicle which was separated by a piece of glass, and to really find out what was going on there, I would have had to have some binoculars. I've been at this venue quite a few times, and I will remember it. Next time I go there, I shall take my binoculars and I shall know exactly what is going on at the front of the stage. But anyway, it was quite difficult. It's quite far back. So stay tuned here at Seismic Radio. If you are not sure where you and how you got this talk, quickly our web address. It's www.seismicradio.org. I repeat, it's www.seismicradio.org. So that's our web address. You can get in touch with us there. And also you can find a lot more talks. So if you go to our audio library, it's John's library. And there at the moment, at the time of speaking, there are about 230 talks, mainly from the 80s. But there are also some talks like from, you know, throughout the decades, from the 90s, the noughties, and then this decade as well, as you can find this talk there as well, and the other talks from the conference. They're all coded to 32 kilobytes, so you can just kilobits per second, so the files are fairly small. You can just download them, put them on your smartphone, and listen to them on the way to work or on the way to the shops or whilst you're shopping or, you know, whilst your family is watching some TV you don't really like. So you can just take your smartphone, stick some earpieces in, and listen to an exciting talk from On the Sofa, if it were there. So stay tuned here, and I shall move over to the conference now. You're listening to Seismic Radio.
I brought my jacket the last 3 years, but I thought, no, it'd be a bit informal this year, and it's so hot as well, isn't it? Brilliant weather. And there's no sofa as well, you know, Dan promised me that, but never mind. Really great to have I was thinking about this earlier, if I had to choose 10 people who've helped shape my own life, where I am now, these two men here would both be in those 10 people without a shadow of doubt, actually, over the last few years. So it's a real privilege to be able to welcome them to my sofa that's not really a sofa, and just to ask them a few questions, really, and just to get some real insight into what's going on in their lives at the minute and what they've been doing and how God is using these two fantastic men. So for me, it's a real privilege. I'm just going to ask a few questions to start with.
Just a quick apology for breaking into the audio stream. You're listening to Seismic Radio, and we are live at the VIA conference. And we'll be here till about, local time is about half past three at the moment, and we'll be here till about 10 o'clock tonight. So it's going to be for the next 6-7 hours.
So please stay tuned. At the moment, we've got a question and answer session, Q&A session, here in Swanwick from the conference center. Okay, I'm going to go back to the conference.
Tony, I think, needs no introduction. Everybody knows Tony. Tony has just written a book, particularly over the last few months, I think. And how's it going? How are the sales going? Are you allowed to say, or is it proving popular?
Well, I, funny you should ask. I phoned up CWR yesterday just to see how it was going, and they've sold just over 1,000 at the moment.
Fantastic.
Which I don't know what the benchmarks are, you know. So I said, well, what do you think about that, and so on. And they said they're extremely pleased at this point. So that was encouraging.
Tell us a little bit about sort of the genesis of the book, if you like. You know, when did it start? How long was it sort of in the pipeline? And then when did it come to birth? What brought it to birth?
Well, people ask me kind of how long did it take you to write it, and which I usually reply about 50 years, which is true actually. That's the reality. So what it's about is kind of me, really. I think there's things that we carry that become us, and whatever we're talking about, us comes through. That's kind of the life message that's shaped by who we are, and that's what I feel about the book. It's kind of a bit of me, you know. So in terms of the genesis, it's the genesis of a lifetime. What the thing that set it off, so to speak, the catalyst, was 2 years ago, and kind of this weekend is special because it was here, right here, that the prophetic words came, as you know, which I felt I would be in serious trouble with the Holy Spirit if I didn't do something about it. So I set to writing. Started on New Year's Day last year, and it sort of took about 8 months, 8 or 9 months.
Fantastic. So, and I know Tony wouldn't say this, I'm sure, but there are some books still for sale at the back there in the corner. If I don't say it, I know John will, I'm sure, amongst others there.
And if you guys don't, I will.
That's it, yeah. Fantastic.
I'm getting cured of my whatever it is.
Dan, have you read the book as yet? Have you picked it up? What are your thoughts as a punter?
Yeah, very good.
What particularly inspired you from the book? Not to put you on the spot or anything, you know.
I was surprised how short it was.
Oh. Leaving space for a second version.
Obviously. Yeah, no, I thought the... because it's such a big topic, could you kind of paint the headline pictures rather than the... This is an ABC of it, and that's what I mean by I was surprised at the chapter length. But there was lots of Tony's stories, and obviously, as you read it, because you know Tony, you can hear Tony's voice in it, and some of the people he talks about, we know, and that kind of is a nice
some great stories, aren't there? Yeah. Sort of dotted throughout the length of the book, and I think what's also helpful for us as well is the questions at the end of the chapters as well, so sort of for your own personal reflection, but also for use within the church. I think that's been really fantastic. So whilst you wrote this book, I know you've said it's sort of your life's journey, if you like, there must have been some reflection time as you've been thinking, right, do I commit this story to paper, do I write about this particular chapter of my life? You've probably had a chance to just sort of reflect on 21st century British church and its values and its cultures. What you know, sort of stepping back, reflecting on it, what would you say are the key issues for us in the church now, 2014?
I think what kind of led me to do it in the end, one, probably the primary thing, was that through the 40 years or so that I've known John, and he's had an input into my life, I came to realise what discipleship could be. And that was something that I felt passionately about, because I had benefited so much from it. And I wanted to make that known in a way that it could be accessible. I think the other thing is that having had the privilege of having some input into churches from time to time over the last few years, you do realise that one of the crunch points is whether discipleship amounts to kind of teaching from the platform, or whether there is that kind of one-to-one, how are we doing? Mm. You know, is this working for you? Are the things we need to talk through? And the whole question of openness and a teachable spirit and a willingness to receive input and so on. And I kind of feel that is still an issue. Mm. And so I was really wanting to highlight that as well, but to do it in a way that was hopefully positive, so that real discipleship is seen not as a threat, not as something that's going to be invasive or anything like that, but something that was entirely positive and entirely a blessing. So those were the things I wanted to paint. And I think in the second part, where I'm talking about kind of values and ethos, and that is, for me, just at the heart of it all.
Because I guess for us as Brits, we're not used to kind of bearing our all, are we, to others, you know, to making ourselves vulnerable with our innermost thoughts and feelings, you know, to a certain extent, you know, confessing your sins. We find that a hard thing to do. Find it a hard thing to do as British blokes, perhaps, but not exclusively, you know, just to share our thoughts and our dreams, the things that are going well for us or not. So, you know, I think that comes through, doesn't it, just how important discipleship is, like the importance of sharing. You raised the issue about encouragement, and we're not great at encouraging each other in the church.
Yeah.
And that was something I know that really was on your heart and your mind as you wrote that piece.
Yeah, I didn't want anyone to put the book down and think, I dare not go there. I wanted them to put the book down and feel, how can I get this? How can I be part of this?
Yeah.
The cue starts here. I want to be a disciple.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to get out of it, that it would be seen as a real privilege.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dan, I guess for you, you know, working with young people a lot of the time, as you do, and you tell us a bit later perhaps a bit about the week you've just been involved in Milton Keynes, you know, I guess you see this all the time, you know, the importance of discipleship, the importance of opening, the importance of encouraging our young people.
Very much. There is a whole move right across young people's work. A lot of talk about discipleship, even with, who's the guy who leads Urban Saints now? Is it Saunders? Is that his name? You know who I mean. Yeah. That was Crusaders. He's just written a book on... called 1, 2, 3, which is the same principle, is how do we disciple? Well, a lot of the stuff that we're doing at work with SU is, how do we, as a church, have faith that sticks for our young people? And one of the key elements of that is discipleship and interaction through the generations, and not just the this age group, but us with young people as well as adults have a really key part to play, which is discipleship, probably just not with those, we wouldn't call it discipleship, it's just being friends and getting to know. So yeah, it's a really key subject right across the board, I think.
And how do we make it stick?
Sticky faith. Well, a lot of it is loving God first and foremost yourself, being the example, because we are called, each of us as parents and as leaders, to follow Christ first and be open. But the research from the Fuller Institute is saying that certainly in America, 50% of the youth groups and those that are very active in the youth group will leave time they go to college and university. The other statistics are saying that they make that decision way before they're 17, 18. They make it 11, 12, 13. They're just not old enough to leave.
Yeah.
The other statistic is that 85% of us start our faith journey before we're 14. So our children and youth work is really, really important. And a lot of things, and the research is suggesting it, it's how does the generations work together? So not just family services, but how do we as older people and younger people do stuff together? Mm-hmm. So whether it's something social, whether it's learning to bake, whether it's just an adult, five adults being interested in one child and just saying, how are you, how are you doing? That has a huge impact, particularly if you're not a parent. Creating safe spaces for young people to have their fears and doubts, and for us not to be very quick to tell them, well, that's wrong, that you shouldn't be thinking like that, but giving them the space to work out their journey, just as we've all worked our journey. In fact, most of the principles in Tony's book are what it's all about.
And I guess one of the things that thrills me about reading some of the stuff in Tony's book is, you know, his... fantastic guy who's gone through this journey year in and year out, year in and year out. You know, and you and I, perhaps in the way where we're working with younger people, you know, who want things right now. It's very sort of instantaneous, spontaneous, isn't it? You know, we've got three screens on at the same time all the time, can't concentrate for a period of seconds, you know. So it's that durability, you're saying. It's about sticking with them through the long haul. It's the marathon, not the sprint, is really what you're saying about that. Fantastic.
It's breaking the myths that, to work with children and young people, that you have to know what's in the charts, you have to be trendy and all that stuff, which is all nonsense. What they're really, really interested in is genuine people who are interested in them. It's the only qualification for any children and youth work. Yeah. Just be genuine. And that means half the time, I don't know. It's just my favourite answer. I don't know. I haven't got a clue. Well, why is that when they come up with a great question? It's just, you're important. And let's go on a journey together.
Yeah. Tony, in the book, there's this great picture, this circle, and it shows how typically we move in a clockwise direction from acceptance. Sorry, yeah, let me get. I jotted this down, from achievement to sustenance to significance to acceptance. And we think to get accepted, we need to start off by achieving something, by doing something great. Tell us about how the Holy Spirit sort of revealed to you that we need to consider that in an anti-clockwise direction.
Yeah, in terms of the diagram, it's not original to me. I think I say in the book I came across it, I can't remember when and where now, it was a long, long time ago. But, my personal story in the book kind of covers that, really, in that kind of believing in myself wasn't something that I was encouraged in growing up as a child, and so there was an awful lot of kind of insecurity and self-doubt that had to be faced, and that was a whole process, which is why for me the whole question of the grace of God is just at the centre of me.
Yeah.
It's who I am. And that was the thing when Sandy Miller read the book and he said, it breathes grace. I thought, that's what I wanted.
Yeah, fantastic.
That's what I wanted.
And you said earlier about you didn't want it to be a book that people put down and walked away from, but one that where people put their hand up and said me. And I think that just comes through from you. We know you and we appreciate you and we've loved you for all these years and we know that grace is right at the heart of all you are, as well as what you say and do, so I think that really comes through.
For me, the discovery of what my Heavenly Father was really like, that's what changed my life. And discipleship without that ain't going to go very far.
Yeah,
it flows out of grace. It flows out of the appreciation of the love of God, the mercy of God. So that's the kind of thing I was trying to convey.
One of the questions I'm going to ask that may be opportune at that point, as you talk about that and about the Father heart of God, was about you reference Peter quite a lot, I think, particularly early on in your book. And I wondered what we might learn most from his story, from Peter's story, and how we might apply some of that to our lives.
Well, I think for me, the key thing about Peter is that one of the freight captions I use is that he had the spirit of a disciple. He kept asking questions, he pressed in, he took initiatives, he didn't just respond when somebody said something to him, he was digging all the time. you know, okay, getting it wrong, making all sorts of mistakes, but he really wanted it, and he provoked so much that Jesus said to him, which we now benefit from, but he was the one who drew it out because he had the spirit of a disciple and never lost it. So you know, without that, discipleship is something, if it's being pressed from top down, it's kind of dead in the water.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan, just I was thinking about sort of young people and in Britain today, really. We heard Gavin Calver talk in the summer from Youth for Christ. And one of the things he's saying about how we write Britain young people off in Britain, and the media kind of fuel the fire of that. And he was interviewed on BBC when the Tottenham riots were on a couple of years ago. What's happening to the youth of Britain? They're done for, aren't they? And he said, well, no, I've got more people praying in a field in Shepton Mallet as we speak right now than there are on the streets of Tottenham rioting.
Yeah.
So let's rebalance that.
Yeah.
And I guess you'd probably go along with that. I mean, you see a lot of positive stuff amongst the young people.
100%, yeah. 100%. And can I talk about Hope and Care?
Yeah, going to say, tell us a few stories about what you're doing with Scripture Union.
One of the things that I've been involved with this week is a project called Hope MK, which is why I'm wearing my sweatshirt. I wanted to show you the back. You want one? Oh, you have to come to Hope MK. Come and join us. Basically, it's 130 young people from 22 churches working across the city for a week through half term to bless the city. So we get them at about 8:30. We send them off at about 7 in the evening, so we feed them at least twice, which has other things to do. So we do some stuff with them in the morning, a lot of fun, a lot of games. We do some worship. We have some great speakers like Roy Crown from Hope, who was the leader of Youth for Christ, and people like that. People are saved. People are filled with the Holy Spirit. And then in the afternoons, we get them to do various projects to bless and serve the community that they live on. And some of it is a community cafe. Some of it's a drop-in. Some of it's a drop-and-play. Some of it's treasure hunting. And some of it's creative evangelism. You name it. They kind of do it, visiting old people. And then yesterday, we've been talking about generous and how do we have be generous. And one of the things that the hoodie represents is the media paints the picture of youth as hoodie-wearing yobs, where what we wanted to say with our hoodies, particularly when you see gangs of them in places all over the city, is that they're not hoodie-wearing yobs. They're bringing hope to the city. So yesterday we gave each team £50 and they were sent off to a different part of the city and told to do one of three things in the spirit of being generous. Either buy a load of stuff, i.e. donuts, cakes and things, and give it away. Another one was trade some stuff up, buy some things and swap it and see what you can get. So for example, one of the projects started off with £50. But before they could spend the £50, someone said, oh, I know that guy. Went to that guy. The guy said, I've got all these screws. I'll give you those. So they swapped the screws for something else, for something else, for something else. In the end, came up with a three-piece suite. I'm like, well, what are we going to do with a three-piece suite? And the idea is then, okay, Lord, who can we give this three-piece suite to? So they prayed. And before they knew long, someone else was, oh, I know that person who knew somebody else, and we were able to give a three-piece suite away. And then the last one was more of a treasure hunting. So we'd sit and ask God, who do you want us to speak to? Who do you want us to give? How do we bless that person? What are the needs in our community? And for some of them, because it was right across the city, parts of Milton Keynes are very middle class and nice, and other estates aren't. And one estate I was on reminded me very much of the Hemingwell a few years ago. It just had that kind of feel to it. And some of these kids are 11, 12, 13, and we're getting them out to talk to people, are kind of really nervous because they've never been on an estate like that. And when you do the risk assessment, one of the risk assessments that made me howl was dogs. And I'm like, what? And seriously, they go around with these great big dogs. So we're going to have to, how do we manage this? with all these young people. But they were fantastic at giving away hot dogs and just trying to talk to the local community and have those conversations and share our faith.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Yeah,
of course. it's interesting to note that not only in Christian circles, but out in the world, there are a lot of really good young people. And we forget that sometimes. About 5 or 6 days ago, Murray and I were at a presentation in Nottinghamshire, in Kelham Hall, if you know that beautiful place. It's a dinner for 240 people, and the charity is Young People of the Year. Have you heard of it? Have you heard of that? Young People of the Year. And one of our grandsons had been nominated. He's 16 years old. And there were 12 finalists. And they told the story, all between 11 and 25. And they told their individual stories on screen. And what they were doing was incredible. Involved in different charities, helping people, just giving so much into the community. And I sat there and I thought, we don't hear these stories. And the guy who set up the charity a few years ago, his motivation was to counter the daily press briefings about rubbish young people. And he gets all of this in the press, it's all photographed properly, and he's spreading the story that there are good young people around. And can I say this, just on a personal note, our grandson, his name is Michael, is on the lower end of the autistic scale. They used to call it Asperger's. So he's had challenges with all of that. And because each one was interviewed, and he was interviewed about that. And he talked about the day that his parents told him, because he had a lot of problem with bullying and stuff at school. And I think he was 14. Was it 12 or 14? Before they told him that he had a problem, and that this explained what it was, and that this was why there was a difference that was attracting the bullying and so on. He said, they told me that they didn't tell me before because they didn't want me to make it an excuse for bad behaviour. He brought the house down with that. Absolutely brought the house down. And he won the junior award. He won the junior award, which was fantastic.
Amazing, yeah, absolutely.
And there were four altogether.
No, absolutely. But I mean, the point we're making, really, isn't it, and what you're saying, Dan, is it's great to hear these good news stories that are going on, because with so many of our young people, like you're saying, you know, they're kind of stereotyped in the press, across the media, social media, etc.
I think what Tony, the point that you make is spot on. Mm. Most young people are brilliant. There are a few idiots, but there are a few idiots everywhere. But most of them are brilliant. You just need to get to know them and see the gold with them and within them.
Yeah.
And seeing them released into their potential is just awesome.
I was thinking, as you're describing these three tasks you gave your team, what would happen if Lord Sugar gave those out on The Apprentice?
I'll tell you what, they put some of them to shame.
Yeah, absolutely.
And these are our kids. When you get them on Monday, it's brilliant, right? They don't know anybody. They're very shy. Yeah, yesterday, I couldn't get rid of them. They're just nuts. They're just so... Their confidence goes from one level to the next, to the next. They're doing stuff that I think, would my church be up for that as adults? Would we want to go and speak to somebody we don't know? How do we feel about, you know, the whole, say, treasure hunting, when God's given you something, when you go and say, oh, you've got a red jumper, God's talked to me about this, and I've got 13, 14-year-olds doing that and wanting to pray for people. We saw some miracles and all sorts of, you know, legs healed and
brilliant,
great stuff happening.
So is this what you do every week, going out and do a sort of a hope week across the east of England? Just tell us a little bit more about your role with Scripture Union.
No, not every week. It's part of what we do. I help churches connect with children and young people. So basically I come and talk to a church and say, you know, what's going on in your town? What's happening? Is there any way we can resource you? A lot of what I do is work with Youth for Christ and Urban Saints in various places. It's how do we help the church do what it's called to do? So some of the things we do, training events, some of the things that we do at the moment is helping church leaderships to think through a 20-year plan for a young person. So starting at zero and let's go for 20 years. And some of the things that might be useful for us, instead of going, oh, A, B, you know, flying like that, having a strategic plan in place.
So tell us a little bit about Scripture Union. I was thinking about this, that my association with Scripture Union is being a 6-7-year-old with a little Sunday school pamphlet with a funny logo at the bottom that looks a bit like a duck and a bit like something else. I'm not quite sure what it was.
Yeah.
And so you don't hear so much about SU because of Youth for Christ, Crusaders rebranding as Urban Saints, you know, YWAM and other Christian sort of young people organisations. Tell us a bit about Scripture Union. Has it had to kind of rebrand itself, redefine itself? How does it?
In one sense, yes. In another sense, no. We're nearly 150 years old. I think that's in 2 years' time. We still do all of the free resources in for children upwards. They have changed their thinking dramatically, so we totally believe in partnering. So we, our vision is to reach the unreached for children, young people and families. So that's mean we do lots with Urban Saints, we do lots with Youth for Christ because we're in it together. Mm. There's a real sense amongst those organisations, it's not one, but yeah, we have a certain style or an ability. How do we complement each other? Excuse me. It's not about getting our logo out there. We do lots of stuff with schools. Many of the trusts that work with us would work within schools, doing lessons, after school clubs,
assemblies.
We've got full-time workers that resource those kind of things. We do holiday clubs, holidays, beach missions, name it.
I'll give you a break so you can get the frog out of your throat just for a minute. Tony, tell us sort of what's the next steps, really. Is there a part two to the discipleship? What's the sort of the next steps for you and for the book? You're saying there might be some exciting possibilities coming up.
Well, yeah, when the endorsements started coming in before it was published, there were so many of them that the publisher says that they kind of woke up to the fact that discipleship was an issue that was scratching where people itched. Yeah. And so they wanted to explore setting up some forums around the country to discuss it. And the first three of those are now organised for next year. The first one is in February, on the 5th of February at Lincoln. Stuart Bell will be speaking, I'll be speaking. Do you know Steve Campbell? He heads up the Cambridge Community Church.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be speaking, and another guy who's gone up to Lincoln, sent up by HTB, the church plant there, and to nurture the things of the Spirit in the diocese. Yeah. So there'll be four speakers. It'll be the day-long thing with Q&A and interaction, as well as four individual presentations. The second one is in London in March, 5th of March, EA headquarters, with Steve Clifford speaking, and two other speakers are being invited now. And the third is in Stafford at Rising Brook Baptist Church, if anybody knows Rising Brook. It's quite a strategic Baptist church in Stafford. And they're looking for a couple more, so... you know, for an old trooper like me, that's a bit exciting.
Exciting stuff, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. And any plans for a second book in due course? I wondered whether... I remember you came when we were in Coventry and you did a set of sessions around the nature of heaven.
Mm.
And you had some real insight into that, which I think really helped redefine some of our thinking about what heaven is like. Not something that we often heard someone speaking about or in such depth. You'd obviously researched it a lot. I wonder whether there was some material in that you might turn into a book. But
yeah, I think a lot of that kind of thing has been very well written. And whether I could add to that, I don't know. If there was going to be another one, what really has made me tick the last few years has been the whole question of the openness of God. That's a different kettle of fish. It would be controversial in some areas. But do you know what? We've got neighbours across the road. They know us. One is a Catholic. Her husband isn't anything. They're good people. And they told Muriel the other day that they had discovered online, I have absolutely no idea how they discovered it, a set of six talks I gave. I don't believe this. And they listened to, and they were an hour each, and they listened to the whole lot. I mean, they must be nuts. And I said, what was it called? Well, she said, I don't know what it's called, but she said it was about the love of God. And I thought, that was the openness of God, and they've got the message. They've got the message.
Fantastic.
See? They got it. Well, I do. You know, one of you is a culprit. I don't know who put it online, but they picked it up. Was it Harlington?
Your home church put stuff up on you online from the old singers.
Oh, have they? Mm. Oh, right.
Yeah. Or we'll have words with Paul Jameson in Coventry. He might know something about it as well. But yeah, but that's great. So will we see Tony pull in on Twitter in time to come? What's engaging that? With the young people, you know.
When you said just now about looking at three screens at once,
yeah,
my problem would be turning on the first one.
Fantastic. Dan, why don't you tell us a bit about Praise Church Kettering and some of the things that are going on there at the minute? I thought that'd be really helpful because I read some of Rachel's stuff. And yeah, it's going to be good to hear what's happening. Yeah, absolutely.
I guess you're referring to the Living Nativity.
One of the things, yeah, but also food bank. It just felt like there's real engagement with the community at the minute.
Yeah.
There's some favour on that, so it'd be good to hear.
Yeah, we went on a journey a few years ago to how do we interact with our community on their terms, and food bank has been a brilliant way in. And as Mick will testify, we hear some really interesting stories from people because our heart is, how do we help you holistically? And food may or may not be the issue. I know you've come for a food parcel, but what's the real story? If the fact that you can't budget is the real issue, then how do we help you get some budgeting advice? But what it has done, it means we can signpost and send people to lots of different places. It's a brilliant way of hearing that. And there are some great opportunities to give them food, and you see some people who are just in a crisis that breaks your heart, and you think, how does this happen? To the other extreme, to some of the more special ones who are, you know, how can I get an easy lunch or a free lunch out of some naive Christians?
Yeah.
That we try and curb. But that's what we're really about. How do we help our community? And that's so really open the door. So that's been awesome. And it's again, it's across the town. But on we do this nativity service, as I guess most of you churches do. And Rachel, prophetically, even though she hadn't realised it, had come up with this great idea, said, next year we're going to do a living nativity, which is a nativity with animals. And we're like, yeah, great. And she was just thinking maybe outside. We haven't got a clue what this is. But what's happened is Rachel has found real favour with one of our local councillors. And they asked her, Rachel was just telling them, thanking them for what they do and telling them what we're up to. And she said, I really want to do a living nativity. And she was like, what's that? She said, well, it's a nativity story, but with animals outside. And what's happened is they've given us the Market Square, which is right in the middle of town on the 20th of December. So it's the last shopping day, to tell our town the meaning of Christmas. So they're doing all the advertising, giving us PA. So we're having three lots of this nativity with donkeys and, not donkeys, camels and goats and...
Donkeys. Oh, yeah, camels. Brilliant. Fantastic. And,
basically, Rachel's just opened a door and we've gone, this feels a brilliant opportunity to share the good news at a time when people want to hear. So it's going to be very interactive rather than just a performance, and it's going to happen. And we've got brass bands come in to do carols and a choir come in to do stuff. But we're really working really hard at getting the church in the town on board. So we've had the budget went from £200 to £1,000 within about 5 minutes. Yeah. And this is a church that's got no money whatsoever. We didn't know how we were going to pay for 200, let alone 1,000. But what's happening is we're just finding favour as money is coming in from places. We had £200 come through the door with Living Nativity on an envelope in notes. You think, Lord, it feels like you're in this.
I've got visions of the Vicar of Dibley scene, yeah. Where they end up not only with the live camels, the live donkeys and the live sheep, but they end up with the live birth as well. So I wonder if you've lined up any pregnant ladies within the congregation who are going to join you?
Friend who's joining 18.
Brilliant. You heard it here first.
But it's just seemed too good an opportunity to share the good news, because many people in our town just don't know the real meaning of Christmas.
Yeah.
And lots of Rachel's conversations with some of the elderly, she's working with them. Well, what's this Christmas thing really about then? They just seem too good to be true. And one of the this is what's so cool. One of the first things the council said to us was, is this going to happen every year? And we're like, we don't even know how to do this yet.
Do it one year to start with. Yeah.
Don't know what we're doing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly.
But it just feels like there's some favour.
Yeah.
Particularly with those things where you know, councils can be a little nervous about faith-based things. So that was really encouraging.
That's fantastic. Really pleased to hear that. We've got about 20 minutes left. I've kind of asked the questions I wanted to ask. So kind of over to you guys, really. Is there anything you wanted to ask Dan or Tony whilst they're here with us that you wanted to hear a little bit more, perhaps about the book or about Dan's work or anything in general? And then I'm going to ask the rest of the leadership team just to come up as well and have a bit of a Q&A for the few moments that we've got left. So, over to you. This is where you join in. Yeah, far away. Well,
sorry, but it's a bit of a big question.
Ah, it's important. Evolution, does it negate discipleship, Tony?
Go back to square one. As far as evolution is concerned, I don't have a problem with an evolutionary process at all, so long as we understand where everything began. And where everything began is in the creative heart of God. Where everything began was divine energy. How God then chose to develop or allow to develop the whole process from there on, and how long it took, quite frankly, as far as I'm concerned, isn't the issue. The issue is that God is a creator, and he did it because he loved us and wanted to enjoy our company. That's the overarching story. So for me, evolution is not a big contention. How does it affect discipleship of young people? I don't think evolution has a moral character. I'm just talking right off the top now, but discipleship is about conforming to the image of Jesus. Evolution is about the survival of the fittest. And it strikes me that's two very different laws. Two very, very different laws. And as far as discipleship is concerned, it is about us being helped into the image of Jesus. And therefore, it just doesn't relate to evolution whatsoever. That would be my answer for 10.
John's got a book to sell us on evolution and discipleship.
Well, I've only got one of them, but it's quite a helpful book, I think, for teenagers that are asking serious questions. It's called If God, Then What? And it's by a guy called Andrew Wilson, and it's a book on apologetics for young people. And it doesn't use the Bible as its basis, because most young people don't understand the Bible or have the Bible. So it starts off with him thinking about
what is most likely. In other words, Hercule Poirot asking the question, what is the most likely scenario with the facts that we have? And so he looks at it there and takes you right through to Jesus. So it's a fascinating book. I found it very helpful. It's been reviewed by a number of people. Joel Virgo, one of Terry's sons, that's in New Frontiers, reviewed it. The Times reviewed it. The Times, a rather impressive young Christian. Various other powerful, compelling stuff. A remarkably gifted writer, Wayne Grudem, Christianity Magazine, says the best book on apologetics that has come from these shores in a decade. So whilst it doesn't necessarily tackle the stuff of evolution, what it does do is tackle the logic of coming to a conclusion of a creator God who put things together, and challenges the philosophers of today who are saying that this all just happened and, you know, it came out of chaos. So it's a really good read. I've read it myself. I don't read a lot of books, to be absolutely honest, but I found it very helpful and bought some for my grandchildren.
Brilliant. Dan, do you want to add something onto that? Yeah, do.
I think just to add into that is that whether we call it parenting, discipling, young people need that influence to grow. And our society, if you just have a general look, is lacking in how do we father, particularly young people, so they can grow up and be whole. And then with the model of discipling is how do we make help them look like Jesus? I think is more needed more now than ever before. And one of the things that we find at Food Bank particularly is a whole generation of parents who've never been fathered or parented properly, who have their own children, well, Simon will tell you, that just don't have a clue. And it's those youngsters are getting older and starting to, it's just going to get worse and worse. And there's a need for how do we parent and help people become whole, which is kind of the heart of what discipleship is in that sense.
Did you have a question here?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I was going to ask you, Dan. It just sparked off something in me then when you said that. What are the kind of questions that young people ask? Because I think so often we tend to think that they are asking a certain question, and they're probably nowhere there. And then we jump in with something that we think they need, and it might not be.
Yeah.
You know, what's the sort of the general?
Well, I think that what you bring up is the massive issue. It's very easy for us to adults to say, oh, a young person needs. And one of the hardest skills is, what is it? Is listening. What are you saying? And getting alongside them. Because they're going through the same struggles that we went through. Is God real? Why is there suffering in the world? Why are my parents split up and yours not? Why? You know, all of those kind of easy, where there isn't really an easy option. And for us, a lot of what we're trying to help people do is go on a journey with that young person, be with them, love them in it, but give them some space to work it out. Yet, Scripture would say, Jesus teaches. So it varies what are the big questions, but the whole identity, who we are, is still massive.
Core of it.
Yeah. The youth this weekend are looking at who are we. This whole concept about having treasure within us, come right back to what you said about your journey and grace and the Father heart of God, is kind of goes across the boundaries of time. We all have to work that out, and I think young people are doing that in a society that's forcing them up to grow very quickly and deal with adult issues at a young age when 20, 30, 40 years ago we didn't, as we'll probably look at a little bit later.
So it's about running the marathon with them rather than just for the sprint.
And for us being that example, in other words, they will follow our examples. If we're running after Christ ourselves, that's probably one of the best things that you can do. And then you can just be alongside them for the rest of it.
Brilliant. Can I ask the other guys on the team just to join us just briefly? Is that all right, Simon and John? Rachel and whoever else I've missed out. Come on in. Yeah. Whilst we do that, ask another question. Yeah.
He put out a statement saying that he has absolutely no problem with the Big Bang and evolution, because he just said what Tony said, it starts with the divine spark. And he said, we've been consumed far too long with the attitude of it's either God or it's either evolution and the Big Bang. And he said, I have absolutely no problems with the Big Bang and evolution. It'll all be accordance to God's creative spark and his timing. And somebody, I think John said earlier on, we pray that this guy doesn't get assassinated. He is touching so many areas that you need to pray for him, because Francis is a revelation. And you need to really pray for him, because remember, in the past, other popes who tried to change things did die suddenly or got shot in the square by an assassin sent in, because they were trying to release people in Poland into the whole kind of freedom issues. So you do need to pray for him. He's a very enlightened church leader at the moment. Banning it completely. He's now put out a papal thing saying no Catholic school, no Catholic church. We'll even display a spider or a cobweb or anything. Yeah. Done. Dusted. We're not going to go there. There's no grey area.
Sorry.
I like being the spokesman for Pope Francis. No, it's really good.
You're the go-to person in Via on all things Catholicism.
Yeah,
absolutely. Fantastic. So, but where's Via going then? I mean, Simon, I was thinking about this when we saw Phil back last night, and it's been brilliant to have him with us. You know, thinking back sort of 10 years ago when he was stood here and preaching maybe in a slightly different way, a different part of his life story, and thinking, fast forward 10 years, I wonder what we'll look like. Will we be here as a group? Will we be gathered here? Will it be much bigger? Will we be in a different model? What's your thoughts? We won't hold you to it, we're just interested.
I'm not going to fast forward 10 years. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. No. We are looking at the future of Via. We're looking at the future of Pioneer. We are part of Pioneer. Via was held together in the Midlands, while Pioneer was basically way, way further south, and sometimes navel-gazing and trying to work out what Pioneer was. And Tony, with his apostolic role, held Via together. John, with their apostolic input again. And we are looking forward to see what will happen around the new Pioneer Hub networks and Loughborough, etc. So all I'll say is that whether it's 10 or 20 years' time, there's still a need for churches to join together in unity, to have a focus together, to have an opportunity to worship together, to have an opportunity to learn and have input. How that is shaped, somebody said recently, conferences are just the same old thing and they're utterly boring because you just keep on repeating the same stuff over and over again. Well, if they are utterly boring, then 194 people here have turned up to be utterly bored. And every time there's a conference, whether it's Shepton Mallet or whatever, thousands turn up. Because there's part of the identity of, if we're 50 people or 60 people and we're in Burton Latimer, we want to belong to something bigger. Mm. And Via had a purpose in that respect. What shape it's going to be in, I don't know. Who's going to be leading it, I don't know. But I do know that the same fundamental issues is that we benefit from when we come together to worship together, to learn together. We grow.
Absolutely. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, thanks.
Just briefly. I think just following on what Simon says, that Pioneer itself, if you look at Billy Kennedy, who's taken over the leadership of Pioneer, he is forging ahead in certain areas. I was wondering if Carl was here, because he would, living close to Billy all the time, would be able to respond better than I could. But Billy has just recently become one of six presidents of the Churches Together in England, the first member of a new church, I think, to take up that position. Gerald took Billy to meet the last Archbishop of Canterbury, and said to the Archbishop, he was saying to Gerald, what do you feel are the things you're concerned about? And Gerald said, well, one of the things is that the new churches have been very influential in the denominational scene over recent years, and they have no part to play in that. And he said it's significant that when you go to the cenotaph in November and all the churches stand there, that there's no representative from the new churches there when they're so influential. And the next thing was that Billy's a president of the of the churches together in England. He's also working very closely with the Methodists, and they've had a revolution to work with Pioneer. There's a whole new movement springing up with young black leaders in the UK. Social action is taking place. The future, the die is set. The important thing is, I think, that we don't lose the relationships God has given to us, that they remain permanent, but we expand them so that we find ourselves in many different forums, but holding firm to those things that God has given to us. And I think relationships develop. And if that spreads across through the denominations, through the churches, we're going to see a great awakening, what I call a quiet revival in the UK, which can actually, you know, explode into the hearts and lives of people all over the place. So I'm really excited about that.
Okay. Great to have Rachel with us as well. Rachel and I share dreams by text or Twitter, don't we? Sometimes I'm on the train in the morning, I say, I had this dream last night, and send it to Rachel. How's the sort of the dream interpretation stream within VIRE, within Pioneer, or from your perspective, coming along? Because there was a great conference in Southampton a couple of weeks ago you were involved in.
I was involved in Four Winds, where Carl Wills invited me to be part of a team to really release something in the nation, and that sounds grandiose, but it really did achieve what he had hoped. Something was let loose amongst 500 delegates. I was invited to talk on dream interpretation, and I had two seminars. I was so thrilled. They were both really well attended. That's always a relief when you put yourself out there. And it felt like the people who came were so very hungry, and they came because they wanted to be accelerated in dream interpretation, in knowing how they could just get on with this and get on with it quickly. And I do think we have now in our culture that need for things more quickly, whether it be food or information. And so I had the pleasure of doing a couple of seminars, and that was exceptional. It was really good to do. I felt like the prophetic weekend, I saw things that I've heard, but I actually saw them outworked. And there's something really special when you see the things your heart desires for actually outworked. So Carl had invited a whole bunch of nobodies, and understand what I mean by that is nobody had a recognised name in the UK, but there were a whole bunch of nobodies taking seminars and doing the stuff, and that was so refreshing that they were, nobody was known. And I've had this prophetic word that has been spoken over our nation about a faceless and nameless generation. Okay, so I actually started to see that happen down in Southampton, and I feel like there was something quite special in that. This year I have had more opportunities than ever to work alongside churches at their fun days that they've done, and we've had dream interpretation tents. So I've been using a few local people and going in and setting up dream interpretation tents and waiting for people to come. And each place you go to has a very different feel, and different kinds of people come. And this year we had a lot of success with young girls, like teenage girls, 14, 15, 16, hearing what God thinks of them for the very first time, and the relief that comes over their faces when they, and they're not Christian girls as far as I remember, the relief that they are known by God is just extraordinary. And we had one chap who gave his life to the Lord after having an experience in the dream interpretation tent, which is what it's all about for me.
It's brilliant. I mean, we were talking earlier about Brits who don't really open up and share things, but I think, you know, certainly through Rachel and Christine and Carl, you know, through the different conferences over the years, I remember coming to Kettering and you both talking so clearly about, you know, how God has spoken through dreams over centuries and centuries and centuries, yet we've kind of put it down over the last 30 years to a bit of a New Age movement, and we better not go there because it's dreams. But actually, it's something that's very, very biblical about how God has spoken through his people, and young men will dream dreams and old men will have visions and so on. And that's been really eye-opening for me as an individual. And just to say as well, just to commend Rachel really and Carl and what went on that weekend. We're in the Eastleigh congregation of the Southampton New Community Churches, and the next morning it was all the buzz on the Sunday morning was about Rachel's seminar on the Saturday. So it was fantastic. So thanks for what you brought to that area as well.
Thanks. For me, I think there has been over 10 years a change in the temperature of the nation, and I think people are so much more happy discussing spiritual issues. When I first did dream interpretation, there would be this almost like you talk about it and a barrier goes up in a person's life because you're seen as weird, and now you're seen as curious and quite interesting, and people want to talk to you. And I think there has been a change because I think our nation is waking spiritually. I think something is happening amongst the UK, the people in the UK, and that people are now curious. I think consumerism is dying. I don't think people are satisfied anymore by their shopping trips, although we still practice shopping trips. And I think people are realising, actually, I'm not satisfied with what I had. And when I get to the next thing, so I've got that and I get the next thing, it's still not satisfying. And I think so there's this groundswell, I think, of interest into spirituality. And for me, it is important that as a church we stand in our spirituality offering answers, because I think we have them. It's just having the ability to talk about those things when the questions arise.
And we talked about church connecting with its community. Bernie, I want to bring you in here just to tell us what the latest is in your neck of the woods and what you guys are involved in and how church is connecting with the community. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead. Simon, I actually have stepped back from leadership of our local church. Ruth has taken it on. But it's still the same work, just connecting at the grassroots with the kids, with the families, where the need is seen is where we try and step in. And although it can be different with different needs and different families, different situations, it really is just the same thing over and over again. And what Dan has said and you have said about young people not being parented and parents not being parented and not knowing how to parent, we are seeing third and fourth generations of that happening. And it is key to actually have people to go in, and we say disciple. Probably other people say to actually parent, but it's the same thing, isn't it? You just take them under your wing and you try and help them where you can, teach them and guide them. And that's very key, especially in the kind of area that we're in. And I think that's key in whatever place you are, because whatever it's an area that is in a deprived area or maybe a more affluent area, you still have needs.
And do you pick up on some of the things Rachel was talking about, that, you know, there seems to be a bit of a shift, and, you know, there's a perception that perhaps people are more open to spiritual things, they're less satisfied with consumerism, that kind of thing as well?
Definitely. I think we even see it on the TV programmes and stuff. You things you look at, it's about vampires, it's about witches, it's about the spiritual world. And it's coming round to the Christian world as well, the opposite side. And that in itself, I think, our young people are asking questions, well, if there's the dark side, well, then there must be something else. And they are more open to listen and to hear and to be prayed for. And we have young people and older people who will accept prayer. They will tell you, I'm not a Christian, I don't believe, I have this problem. Oh, will you pray for me? So they are definitely open.
I'm really mindful of the time. We've had over an hour now. We've had a lot of fun together. Is that okay just to stay another 5 minutes or so before coffee? Is that okay? That'd be brilliant. Any other questions that folk in the audience want to ask? My daughter's coming towards. Are you going to ask a question, Susanna? No, just gone a bit shy. Yeah, do you want to say something or add a few comments?
Just following on from Bernie, and the question earlier on, what is it that young people are asking? Most of them are asking, who am I and why am I here? When you actually break it down. Who am I generally is expressed by
by the statement, I don't know who I am, and I don't know why I'm here. They may not know love. They may be so uncertain. I mean, the work that we were involved in for so many years, and God will bring us on to new variations on it, and we're still involved because we're still working in the community, of course, is the number of young people, and they're not here now, but the number of young people who over the years have come to Bernie and I to find some form of a parenting identity. You know, we have a policeman down in Sussex who's 40, and he calls me Dad. We met him when he was a teenager, and it's a miracle he's a policeman, because he should be in jail, the way he was behaving and the stuff he was getting up to. He just never got caught. We have a girl in the west of Ireland who's 36, 37, mum and dad. We've got a girl who's 18, coming 19, mum and dad. And another boy who says whenever his life begins to go near the buffers, it's the phone call. Can I meet with you? Can I talk to you? And over again, it's not that Bernie and I are magnets for this. It's the fact that we're open to young people who are desperate to say, who am I? Where am I? What am I? And one of the things about their identity is, who loves me? Who values me? And I'm all on for the week in Milton Keynes, which sounds incredible, because what that is, that's about sowing seeds for young people to get the inspiration to go and do it in their own areas. But what we need after that is we need a legacy. And I suppose our hope, the Hope Project on this side, is about legacy. It's about the long term. It's about 17 years becoming 27 years, becoming 40 years, whatever it takes. You know, we've already seen in our community where you support one mum through the work, through the support network, whatever. One mum gets to know about parenting. Her children then get to see what a good mum is. And then they go on to the next generation and they know how to parent. You know, so it's so important that the kids are mostly asking, who am I and why am I here? Who am I when I'm not wanted in my own family? Who am I when my dad didn't stick around? Who am I when I get crap? Who am I when this goes on in my life? They're so unsure. And this spiritual aspect that Rachel's talking about, just look at the TV programs, whether it's Darren Thingamy or whatever, or Haunted House or seances or everything else. There's the enemy will always seek to answer and capture them, and we will seek to answer and release them. And we have to have a voice. I'm passionate about this. The church has to have a voice into young people's lives and into adults' lives, because after all, we're the only one who is supposed to be speaking the truth and the only ones who are supposed to bring the light. And if we don't, if we step back and say, all young people are in a disaster, then very quickly they will become to live disastrous lifestyles. So it's about us engaging.
Can I just link that with the previous question?
Yep. We're talking about the community and touching broken lives. And the question before was about the future of VIA. Two years ago at this conference, Carl prophesied to VIA, if you remember, and he said that there had been those who had kind of categorized VIA, and he said God was breaking the categorization. He said that we were a prophetic movement, and he said that the mandate for a prophetic movement is Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord is on me. To preach the good news to the poor and to bind up the brokenhearted. And my vision for VIA is, because I look around the VIA churches and I see every church is doing their darndest to do that. It is the DNA of VIA. And my vision is that VIA does that more and more and more and more. And we're together to encourage one another just to do that more and more and fulfill our prophetic vision. Sorry, I got a little bit.
I don't think we could end on a better note than that. So at 20 to 4, knowing coffee's just sort of 5 minutes away and afternoon cake, can I just thank you all for sharing a bit of who you are and where you're at the moment. Really, really appreciate it, particularly to Tony and to Dan. I did just bring a little gift for Tony and for Dan, and this will show how much I appreciate them, because a lot of you know I'm quite partial to the Badger beer, and this one's called the Golden Glory. And I thought it was really appropriate for them both. So can we thank them both, Tony and Dan? Thanks.
Can I just say one thing? It's not just on the sofa. You've hardly heard from Bernie Resford. We're here all weekend. Come and find us if you do want to talk to any member of the team. Thank you again, MC.
Thank you, Mark.
Well done. Can I just say, I'm the living proof that dinosaurs still exist. I don't own a mobile phone. That was Christine's that went off. And I tell you, we never get calls on Christine's mobile phone unless it's selling personal protection PPI. Yeah. That was a PPI.
Whereas I do own a mobile phone. Whoa!
What is that, Tony? Oh, it's a mobile phone. It's
not a brick, anyway, is it? It's not a brick. You're listening to Seismic Radio, and we're here at the Bayer conference in Swanwick. The conference will continue till about 10 o'clock tonight, UK time. At the moment, it's just a quarter to four, so it's going to be near enough another 6 hours.
For more talks from the conference itself, from the Swanwick conference via Vision in Action, on the 1st November 2014, please go to either our YouTube channel, which is at Seismic Radio, go to our website www.seismicradio.org, click on the YouTube icon, and it will take you straight to our YouTube channel, and most of the talks should be there. But also you can go to our audio library. Just click on the seismicradio.org, turn, look at the right-hand side, scroll down, you see a little library building, and if you look really, really closely, you can see John's library. And there you do what? You click on the library, then you click on the library again, because there are some other libraries. It just takes you to a standard archive page, a library page, where we have got a compilation of different libraries. And then from there you select down there, about 230 talks there, and the talks from the Bayer conference at the time of talking, which is November 2014, they're right at the bottom. Obviously we'll be adding more and more material as time goes on, so by the time you hear this talk, who knows where it is, but it's pretty much after 230, and you should find the talks there. Okay, thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy the talk. If you did enjoy it, maybe let us know. Why not just drop us an email and say hi? You can do this at info@seismicradio.org. You can also go to our Facebook book. I need to slow down with my talking. You can go to our Facebook page, and that's the one, to our Facebook page, from our website, and you can like us, or maybe you can even like the talk. Okay, so anyway, check it out, and it should be good fun. Okay, thanks for listening. God bless, and carry on and tuning in to seismicradio.org.